No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. We're back. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. And yes, it's been over a month, but we've had some time off, and yes, there's been some news with the Arizona Cardinals land, but most importantly, we are about to embark upon a new NFL year, which means free agency, which means trades. And to the delight of our wonderful co-host Seth Cox, it means talking NFL draft. But that's not tonight, even though he tried to make it that way. I tweeted about that yesterday. When I said it was time to bring back the show, let's fire it back up, talk preview free agency. He managed to, you know, turn it into a draft issue. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and we're talking Arizona Cardinals free agency, the NFL, Larry Fitzgerald, Darnell Dockett, a whole bunch. So join us. I hope you're listening. If you're listening live, thank you as always for making us a part of your Cardinals following, of your football following. Whether you are a member of RevengeOfTheBirds.com, our home site, or whether you are listening, traveling by on the internet through Blog Talk Radio or through Stitcher Radio or iTunes, or whether you're listening to this via download again, via any sort of audio program that you can subscribe to or through Revenge of the Birds. Thanks for joining. We got a lot of things to talk about because it's been good. It's been a long time. As we talked about the needs of the Cardinals moving forward after their loss in the playoffs to the Carolina Panthers, a lot has happened. And so while we wait for Seth to come on, I'll go ahead and give you the headlines of the Arizona Cardinals and more or less the heavy hitting them when it comes to the NFL in general. So let's go back a bit. Since the last week we talked and you listened, we started back and Todd Bowles was hired as a head coach by the New York Jets, which made an opening on the staff for the Arizona Cardinals. They promoted outside linebackers coach James Betcher, young guy, no NFL experience other than a couple of years here in the NFL. 3 years in the NFL. Before that, some coaching in college, but they promoted him to defensive coordinator. Bruce Arians calls him a rising star. That's one of the things we will briefly touch on. The talk of the offseason has been thus far, up until recently, it was Larry Fitzgerald and his uncertain future with the Arizona Cardinal. Now, there is no uncertain future now. He is going to be a Cardinal at least for the next two seasons. The team and Fitzgerald came to terms on a new contract, one that instead of that $23.6 million salary cap hit, which he was due to make, which he was due to bear this upcoming season. And rather than cutting him and still having to carry over $14 million of salary cap space on the contract, they came to a new deal. It is technically a four-year deal, but the last 2 years void. It is essentially this: 2 years of $22 million guaranteed money. His salary cap hit is under $11 million now. Very, very much a whole lot better. So they saved more salary cap space than by cutting him. The difference is that his cap hit will go up a little bit next year. And then he will have whether he decides to move on, hit free agency, retire, stay with the car, unless they extend him, they will be looking at around $9 million of dead money. After they cut that deal, the Cardinals have started to pop up in some rumor mills, and we're going to talk some more about that tonight as Seth comes on the line. And Adrian Peterson, the names come up. The Cardinals are connected to him. DeMarco Murray. And more recently, Darnell Dockett. Darnell Dockett, longtime Arizona Cardinal, 11 seasons with the team, the last of which he missed the entire year due to a torn ACL. But previous to that, 10 years, 2 missed games total. And the team released him after they were unable to come to terms on a redone deal, as he was due to make a little more than $6.5 million this season. And his salary cap hit was nearly $10 million. They have released him with the door open to return. If he doesn't, with the potential of his return, then we'll talk a little bit about that. Around the NFL, some news came down today, Tuesday. I know you're probably listening to this at a later date. The Eagles and the Bills made a trade. General manager, head coach Chip Kelly is trying to form the Oregon Ducks down in Philadelphia. And traded Shady LeSean McCoy, one of the best backs in the NFL. Traded him to the Buffalo Bills. In return, they get, the Eagles get former Oregon Duck linebacker Kiko Alonso. Fantastic talent. A little bit of uncertainty coming back from an injury. However, Alonso and Chip Kelly are reunited with speed on that defense. In fact, I haven't had a chance to talk to Seth about this, and I'm going to have an article about it Wednesday morning on revengeofthebirds.com. And of course, head on over to revengeofthebirds.com. This is the best Cardinal site you can find when it comes to fan community. That is a shameless plug, of course. Well, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio, so of course we're going to promote the site. It is a site that I run that primarily has my work on this site with a lot of love from fans and a lot of love and help from some other writers as well, such as Seth, who will be joining me shortly on the line. And we'll be talking about the fact that Adrian Peterson reportedly has told the Vikings, the Minnesota Vikings, with whom he is currently under contract, that he would be willing to redo his contract, for 5 teams if in a trade situation. One of those teams reportedly is the Arizona Cardinals. So once again, we have Adrian Peterson popping up on the Cardinals radar. Kent Summers, a local reporter, mentioned it on the radio a little while ago, got some buzz. It's been, you know, the name's come up with Adrian Peterson's father has said it. Likewise, it's been a kind of a wild ride here, and free agent's still a week away. So if you'd like to join us tonight, if you want to join us on the line live at Revenge of the Birds Radio, if you want to have some comments, questions, jokes, hopefully not insults, but prefer no insults, you can join us on the line on Revenge of the Birds Radio 646-478-3787. That's 646-478-3787. I'm still waiting for Seth to join me on the line, and we can go ahead and talk a lot about some of the topics. We're going to talk a little bit about, there's just a little bit because it's old news, Larry Fitzgerald contract. We haven't talked about it yet. I should have got the radio show on right after the deal. Should have talked about it, but we didn't. So we're going to touch on a little bit. What about James Betcher? What do we expect from him? Was it a good move? Is it a risky move? Darnell Dockett, who had a visit with the San Francisco 49ers Monday evening, as it was reported. He hopes to have a new contract signed with a team by the end of this week. He visited with San Francisco 49ers, a team that, you know, came hit on hard times, but he's always had respect for their fan base and the franchise itself. However, that kind of raised the ire of some Cardinals fans, as you know, pretty much don't like the 49ers. Yeah, I'd have to say that that's probably the case. We don't like the 49ers. There's really not much that we like about them. I happen to like Dave Fucello, who runs Niners Nation. He's a good guy, but I can't really accept the fact that he's a Niners fan. And so that's considered a major character flaw in my book. Sorry, Fooch. We've had Fooch on the show. He's a friend of the show, of course. But yeah, so Darnell's had a visit with San Francisco. He's got a few teams lined up, and reportedly was only just less than $1 million off. The Cardinals offered him reportedly $2.5 million for 1 year, with the possibility of joining, of making up to $4 million based on playing time and performances and Pro Bowls and things like that. It's a possibility he could come back if he is willing to bring an offer back to the Cardinals.
I'm not sure if Jess can hear me. I'm on the line though. This is Seth Cox with Revenge of the Birds Radio, and turn that off. Sorry about that. Jess will be with us once he figures out his end of things. But as Jess said, we're going to talk a little bit about the Arizona Cardinals in the offseason as we get started and see where the guy where the team's going to go. They've already made, obviously, the biggest move of restructuring Larry Fitzgerald and cutting Darnell Dockett. So, Jess and I, we're going to start with that. How did the Fitz contract work out? I think for the Cardinals, it was obviously a must. When you look at what their offense was without Fitzgerald on the field,
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time. And the
I'm not sure if Jess is back yet. Sorry. The program kicked me out. I'm not sure if Jess did that. But, yeah, I mean, with Fitzgerald, you have to look at the Cardinals had to get his contract restructured. From an on-field perspective, they needed him still. I don't know if you'd say unfortunately in a bad way, but unfortunately he's, you know, still the best wide receiver on the team, and they needed his presence on the field in order to compete with the Seahawks, you know, which is obviously the goal, the two-time defending NFC champion Seahawks. So, when you look at Darnell Dockett, that's a little different. I had texted Jess on, I think it was Friday or Saturday, told him I was told that they offered $2.5 million for 2 years. Kent Summers came out today and said that it was $2.5 million for 1 year. So trust Kent way more than me on any inside information. And that was, you know, but the $2.5 million, I was told that was kind of the sticking point that he wanted more than that, and the Cardinals really didn't want to come off that $2.5 million, which, you know, from the Cardinals' perspective makes sense. You have a guy who is 33, going to be 34, coming off a knee surgery, and in a role where he can be looked at as a part-time limited player at this time. And to be truthful, while they ran out of gas at the end of the year, they didn't miss his production very much. It is interesting, something that Jess and I had talked about off the air before, that they have a new DC who is a good hire in keeping with a continuity of the defense. But you wonder how it's going to be impacted, losing kind of a vocal, emotional leader like Darnell Dockett, and you know, if the Cardinals do get off to a slow start defensively, do guys start to, you know, wonder about the moves of moving on from Darnell, you know, hiring Betcher? Those things are always, you know, things to watch. I think, but from just the hiring standpoint, you have to look at it and say continuity is important. You have a guy that has been in the defense, has run the defense, and now you're going to see him call the plays. That's really going to be the biggest difference you'll see this year. It's just in-game play calling and how Betcher is going to differ from what Bowles did as a defensive mind within the actual game. Game planning and things of that nature will probably flow along the same lines as what we've seen before. But, I mean, what a lot of us credited Todd Bowles for was his in-game adjustment. So it's going to be interesting to see how Betcher does with those type of things.
Hey, Seth, if you can hear me, can you hear me? All right. Unfortunately, I'm going through a backwards channel. I honestly don't know what's going on. Okay. I was connected. Was there at any point? Oh, now it's saying I'm not connected. What? What now? So I'm connected using my Google phone number to call. So I probably don't sound terribly clear right now.
No, actually, you're fine.
Okay. So tell me, Ketch, I heard you were talking Darnell Dock. Have you talked to Larry about Fitzgerald at all?
Yeah, I just said that I thought it was important that they re-sign him because Michael Floyd just didn't make the jump to a number one receiver. So outside of the goodwill, you know, legacy, all the off-the-field stuff, he's still, unfortunately, I guess, in like a non-bad way, the best wide receiver on the team. So you couldn't get rid of your best wide receiver and in the same vein, the most popular player probably in the Arizona Cardinals franchise history, you know, in one fell swoop when you don't really have that next guy ready and waiting in the wings.
And for me, it was as simple as this. I didn't think the Cardinals could win a Super Bowl without Larry Fitzgerald. If they were looking forward to win a Super Bowl now, they have to do it with Larry Fitzgerald because they need him not only the player and the leader. And the fact that they were able to redo his deal to make it less than by cutting him, it was a no-brainer. Yes, there's going to be some dead money down the line, but that was always going to happen. So we're back to normal. So we got Fitz back. You got Floyd, who can play the number two, and maybe he can develop a little more, or maybe that's all he'll ever be. But for me, good deal.
Yeah, and I think the thing is with Floyd, and people get this twisted when I say he's a two, and they, you know, they get upset. A number two wide receiver in the NFL right now, especially with the way the Cardinals offense is set up, is a really important position. They have to have a really good number two wide receiver, and they do in Michael Floyd. He just hasn't shown to be the guy that can be the one, and so that's
week in and week out, he hasn't done it.
Yeah, that they still need Fitz on the roster to be the guy that kind of does the Hines Ward grunt work of the Bruce Arians offense. And while Fitz may not like that, that's the unfortunate reality of what they need him to do, because Floyd is more of a big play receiver while Fitz is, and you know, maybe John Brown can turn into somebody that wins in the short and intermediate. But right now, Fitz is the only guy that can consistently create open throwing lanes in that intermediate. And so that's kind of got to be his role. And I know he's not always happy with it, but it is what it is at this point.
Truly, truly. Now, with Dockett, do you think fans should be mad that if, for example, if he signs with the 49ers, if he signs for some reason with Seahawks or the Rams? I know in conversations with me, you mentioned watch for the Lions and watch for the Rams. I didn't think the 49ers necessarily would have that much interest, and I don't think the Seahawks will have that much interest, at least at a price that he wants to play for. How angry should fans be if he lands somewhere on arrival?
I don't know if you can. Here's the thing with Dockett. He has been loyal in the open at all times. We all know about kind of the backroom stuff at the end of the Wiz and Horton era. So, you know, he's obviously not been, I don't want to say unloyal because that's not what he is, but like he obviously had issues with Wiz and Horton at the end of their tenure. And when the Cardinals let them go, you know, they could have really cleaned house and got rid of, you know, some of the Wiz and Wiz leftovers in, you know, like a Dockett and players like that. But they chose not to because they thought his leadership and you know, what he did in the huddle and, you know, during games, maybe not so much impactful, but vocally and getting guys lined up correctly and things such as that, they thought that was important and they kept him on.
Well, and it's not only important, not only that, but Daka was one of the first guys Bruce Arians reached out to when he was hired, which meant he knew how much he meant to the team. He knew how much how valuable he was, and that he still had some stuff in the tank. My issue, as you brought up, is kind of conversation we've had before, is, and I actually, the point I made to you about buying into Betcher, and if, especially if they move on for Dockett, who was a captain. That's one of those things that's really tough to move on. It's hard to say goodbye to a captain and just release him. That doesn't go well in the locker room. I'm a little bit less worried now about how things go over with Betcher now that Larry Foote is on that coaching staff, because he brought immediate respect to that locker room. And I think the fact that he is on the staff with Betcher and that he will be helping out, even though he's inexperienced as a coach, and heck, he might end up being back on the roster if he decides to do that, honestly, if he's depth, I don't care. He'd make a great guide, but yeah, I think he'd be even better as a coach. And the fact that he's on the fight will, I think it kind of mitigates any of the issue that I thought there might have been with the loss of Dockett. Just because Foote's in that locker room still, well, he's on that staff. He's going to be around with those players. They know him. They respect him. They love him. And he's a winner, because not only has he played at a high level, he's played at a high level on championship teams. So he knows what it takes. He's worked under respected guys. He played under Dick LeBeau. I mean, you don't get the resume he has and the coaching tree he comes from. It's really hard to not have respect for that. And so I think that will go a long way for Betcher staff to have not only Larry Sanders, but to have Larry Foote on the staff will have instant credibility in the locker room. The fact that they already know him too.
Yeah. Well, and I think the one worry about Betcher is, like I said before, I don't know if you heard it, but I think his in-game adjustments are what probably Coach Arians, why he was so active in trying to find whatever that role they wanted for Mike Nolan and Dick LeBeau and all those guys that they talked to, senior advisor or whatever they were calling
it. Yeah.
I think that's why they wanted that role, was because they wanted a voice in the room. And maybe that's what Larry Foote will be, you know, as you just brought up. They wanted a voice in the room that had called it before. And I think, and this is just my opinion, but I think that's what they wanted, to go with a young, hungry, aggressive defensive coordinator, just in case things didn't start off great, which happened.
Oh, exactly. I mean, exactly. You got Larry Sanders on the staff. Since he's never called a game, he has someone during the week and on the sideline with him to say, okay, he's got his game plan, but if he freezes or if he has any questions, well, what should he do? He's got a guy who's been a defensive coordinator, who's called plays during the game, as opposed to Betcherbot, by all reports, was great and part of the adjustments. He was good at catching things and was part of that locker room at the halftime adjustments that they made. How does that translate? That's going to be the thing. How does that translate into actual play calling and game planning? Can he do it?
Yeah. And I think, but going back to Dockett, I think if you get mad that Dockett is looking at teams in Arizona, or, you know, that Arizona will play against, I think what you have to remember is this is Darnell Dockett, and he always is emotional in his decision making, or what he says on Twitter or what he, you know, does during the game. And that's part of the reason the fans loved him so much, was because there's a lot of that, you know, that they fed off of that energy, emotional energy. And so I think part of it is he's emotional right now. And I think the other part of it is he probably wants to win. So it's not like he's going to go to a team like, I don't know. Again, I don't mean this in a bad way, but like Jacksonville, you know.
No, he's not. While he's from Florida, he's not going to go to the Dolphins he's not going to go to the Dolphins, and he's not going to go to the Jaguars. Yeah. I think he likes it out here.
Yeah.
And he wants to win. I mean, that's
And so I think, and I think in a way, you know, San Francisco is probably in a similar position to where Arizona was, you know, with Larry Foote coming in and Carlos Dansby coming in, and they're probably looking at Darnell the same way, like, okay, a new staff, a new, you know, we need a veteran presence. Maybe he won't be the best player, but we need a veteran presence that can come in and, you know, Tom Sula can lean on to be a voice in that locker room for what we're doing. You know, and I'm just spitballing here. And I think, but I do think there is something to the fact that he wants to be able to show Arizona at least once, probably twice a year, that, hey, you made a mistake. And
yeah.
You know what? That's what we loved about Darnell Dawkins.
Exactly.
That's
talk. That's talking.
Yeah, the competitiveness to say, hey, screw you, you're wrong, let me show you to your face. And so the fact that we love that in that guy for so long, I think it is a bit hypocritical now to be like, oh, well, if he goes, you know, he's a traitor if he goes to, you know, the 49ers or the Rams. I mean, it's just so backwards from what we expected out of Dockett as fans for so long.
Kind of the thing, I hope that it doesn't end up being a mistake, but if they were really, as was reported today, less than $1 million apart, what in the world happened? Why didn't a deal get done? I mean, maybe the Cardinals were playing hardball, Isaac, and they're trying to be fair but play hardball. I had written, especially if you, I know you kind of disagree with the idea of another legacy player, but I'm pretty sure, especially when it comes to the agent that he's got, the main sticking point was he was due $6.5 million. That's really probably what he wanted, whether it was over 1 year, over two, if he got that guaranteed. I thought that would have been a wise thing to do. Give him $5 million up front, pay him $1 million this year, pay him, or 1.5 this year, pay him, you know, pay him $2 million next year and have a voided third year where he can retire and you're left with just a little over $1 million in dead money. I know production wise, you say, yeah, you don't really need him, especially with the defensive line that they've got. They do have all that. The one thing for me, while Dockett has some uncertainty at age, he's still one of the quicker guys there when they want speed. They do kind of have an unproven group of the other outside of Calais Campbell. The guys they have under contract are, you know, they played roles really well, but can they do it? Can we count on Frosty Rucker to produce the way he did last year, especially since he started out the season banged up? Now, he was great. He was really good last season. Can we count on that from a 32-year-old, you know, taking a 34-year-old, replacing a 32-year-old? Then you got Ed Stinson. He got banged up. You got Josh Morrow. He's still, well, what is he? Kareem Martin still, haven't seen really much of anything from him yet. So a guy who you know is going to produce and be able to play a role well and draw respect from offensive lines. I hope that doesn't end up biting him in the butt. Now, if you can bring back Tommy Kelly, okay, that makes things a little bit better. We've got both Rucker and Kelly to be able to play the role and do it better than the season, hopefully not have played so much. But if you end up with both those guys, I am much more comfortable with Dockett leaving. But if you see Tommy Kelly leave and you're just left with Frosty Rucker and Ed Stinson, I'd rather have somebody else in that rotation, and a Dockett would be perfect in that role.
Well, and I think the other thing that we haven't even hit on yet is that you've really lost 2/3 of your defensive line because Dan Williams is probably going to go somewhere.
Oh, goodness, yes.
I think losing Williams and Dockett is a little harder, and who knows? I mean, this is so early in the offseason, and, you know, they could end up signing, you know, a really good nose tackle and, you know, drafting a defensive end in the first round, and you know, none of this really matters. But it's one of those things where, on paper right now, the defensive line is not as good as they were when the season ended. And for a team that has those aspirations of being in the Super Bowl, you know, between the linebacker spot and now the defensive line, I think it's fair to go, okay, I mean, obviously we're going to see what the plan is, but okay, can the free agency start so we can see the plan in action? Because right now we're all like, what's the plan here?
Yeah, well, and the Cardinals had so much turnover from their front seven last year, to go through it again would be kind of an interesting thing to see. Well, let's kind of move on towards let's talk likelihood. Let's talk percentage chance with some players that they're going to be back. So I'm gonna give you a name, and I want you to give me a percentage chance that you think that they're coming back. These are some guys that will be free agents, that they're guys that are currently on the roster who might not be because of salary cap or performance or whatever. So let me toss some names out there. Let's start with the biggest name on the list. Well, maybe the biggest name. Let's talk Dan Williams. What percentage do you give Dan Williams returning to the Cardinals?
After the Ricky Jean Francois contract and what allegedly the Cardinals are offering, which is, I've read, $3 million. That's what they wanted to be at. I don't think he's coming back, because if Ricky Jean Francois got, what was it, 3 years, $9 million with, you know, incentives up to 11 and a half, then Dan Williams should get 3 years and $15 million at least.
Oh, I think easy. And we're hearing six, maybe $7 million a year. I know that, yeah. I know the NFC East is interested. I've heard the Giants. I've heard the Redskins. He's going to have some offers out there, and at his age too, he's going to get years too.
And I say this for tonight. I forgot to tell you this. I got a text from a buddy that has some good insight into the Redskins, and he said that Dan Williams is one of their top targets, and they're going to pony up for it. So, you know, we'll see if that comes to fruition. But, you know, if the Cardinals were wanting to be at three and he's thinking 5-6, I mean, that's a huge disparity. I mean, it may, you know, in numbers 3 to 5 may not sound like a lot, but in terms of what the Cardinals have in cap space, yeah, that's a lot of cap space when you're talking maybe doubling what you were hoping to get a guy for. So
exactly.
I think he's probably around 20-25%. I'm going to guess he's gone and he won't be back with the Cardinals next year.
I give him at the most 10% chance of returning, because the type of player he is, because of the level of play. And I think he showed last year, I think he showed the enough teams, because he did play a little bit of defensive end in that 3-4 set. I think he showed enough versatility to show that he could be productive and solid, not only as a 3-4 nose tackle, but as a 4-3 defensive tackle, to be able to increase his value. It's a bummer. the truth is matter. I understand. And that's one of the interesting conversations that's been going on the site, 'cause I wrote about this not too long ago, is, well, they've got to bring him back. They've got to pay him. But at the same time, the way they have their salary set up, can they afford to pay a guy $6 million a year, even $5 million, maybe even $4 million, for a guy that, if it weren't for the health issues on the defensive line, he would have seen roughly the same playing time as Kevin Minter, right around 29-30%, so less than a third of the snaps. And yes, a solid nose tackle is essential to a 3-4 defense when it comes to their base sets. Can you pay that, especially with the Cardinals, with the aspirations they have? The downside is, of course, they don't have anyone. We thought 1 year ago that this Cardinals were prepared to let Dan Williams go because Alameda Tiamo was there, because he was so good in 2013. What, for whatever reason, no one ever talked about it. He got healthy and then barely saw any time. I don't know whether he lost a step, he lost his work ethic, just got in the doghouse. And now he's a restricted free agent. I'm granted the Cardinals can bring him back for about $1.5 million, which is reasonable, but I don't think he'll even get that. I think if they bring Tiamu back, it'll be something in the realm of, you know, 800,000, 900,000, maybe $1 million. But they were in a good position before. they're not so much anymore because we don't know who there is and what the production will be behind Williams. So it's a very big, big question mark.
Yeah, one of the things you look at is, you know, like you said, is playing time. And can you pay a guy $3, $4, or $5 million to be a, you know, at most 50% player? And we're talking 50% in certain games where you've got, you know, 15 or 20% in other games. So I don't know. I don't think you can afford to pay that. And, you know, the NFL has shown in the last couple of years that there are some solid nose tackles that you could find in around 3 to 4, or, you know, even 5, and plug them in for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, and then you do it again. But as I text you the other night, every person I've spoken to has told me that the Cardinals are going to handle the nose tackle position in free agency. I don't know who, honestly, because I look at that list of guys and I'm like, well, DJ Rodney is going to probably cost more than Dan Williams. And then there's CJ Mosley, who I like, but he's, you know, he was a part-time player in Detroit. And when he was asked to go full-time, he wasn't nearly as effective. Now, granted, like you said, he's going to be
A part-time player anyway. He's playing at the nose.
Maybe that's their, you know, target. But, you know, if it does come down to the draft, there are about 3 to 4 guys in that late day two, early day three range that I think can come in and fulfill that 30% role. Maybe not as good as Dan, but, you know, literally, you know, a fraction.
Reasonably okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next guy. The biggest name on the list, probably the most recognizable name on the list league wide, and that would be Antonio Cromartie. I think, knowing the cap space, knowing the coaches that are out there, I give Cromartie at best, a 5% chance of returning.
Yeah, I was going to say 5% too, because that's, I just don't see it. I know he wants $8+ million a year. And I can see a team like the Jets or Bills giving him, you know, 3 years at like $24-25 million with, you know, half of that guaranteed and him running off with that. And I don't think the Cardinals can do more than like three years. Maybe,
which is what they did a year ago. And mind you, an off season ago when Cromartie signed, he didn't want that deal. He was given the offer, and he sat on it. He was really it was the first time that we'd seen a free agent. Because usually the kind goes, if you leave, this offer's gone. They let him stew on it for a day or two, and then he came back because then he realized there wasn't anything else. He wasn't happy. I mean, he was glad to be on the team. He liked the team. He liked the defense. He liked the role that he played, but he wasn't thrilled about his market. He knew he had a down year in 2013. He didn't want to sign for the $3.5 million. That's not what he wanted to do. And he tried not to, but he didn't find anything better after the year that he had. And with the Fowler cap space that's out there, when it comes to the cornerbacks, we're going to see Revis set the market. But then after that, I don't think Cromartie will be far behind.
Well, you have to remember, rumor is Byron Maxwell, is that the guy out of Seattle, is going to come in like $10 million a year.
Oof.
So if Cromartie, you know, Cromartie's probably right with Maxwell in terms of players. So you're talking, you know, maybe a little bit less because he's a veteran and, you know, obviously less years because he's 31, I think. So
yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, even if I could see a team doing what kind of Cleveland did with Carlos and saying, I think Carlos got 4.24, but like 14 guaranteed or whatever it was. I could see that being kind of the same scenario. A team's like, okay, we'll give you low base numbers, but we'll guarantee them, you know, the hell out of the contract for you. And I could, yeah, that's something I could definitely see. Game. Basically, what any team has to do to outbid the Cardinals is just front-loaded deal.
That's It won't take much. And the Cardinals are kind of prepared. They got Jerrod Powers under contract. Bruce Arians keeps talking about Justin Bethel. I think they're going to address. I've heard that they want to address the corner. Was that you? They want to address the cornerback position in free agency. Probably a tier two type guy, but they're kind of an okay position, because having those two guys, but between Cromartie and Peterson, they were already had a luxury on their defense, and especially if they address their pass rush, they're not going to need two island press guys.
No, and I think you know they're probably going to want to add a veteran presence back there, just you know, because Peterson still is youthful in his approach to things sometimes, and Bethel is, you know, we're talking a guy that's played what 25, 30 snaps in his career on the defensive side of the ball. So, and then you know you have a guy that's strictly kind of a slot corner in Matthew, you know, a slot safety basically in Matthew. So you're probably going to want to see a like you said, a tier two guy that can be kind of like the Antoine Kayson was. Was that 2 years ago or was that 3 years ago? I can't remember.
No, that was 2 years ago. That was back 2013, yes.
Yeah, so same type of thing where, you know, he's probably not going to play if everybody's healthy, but you're not going to have to go find a guy on the market, you know, in October, God forbid something happens.
Let's go to another guy that's also on the roster, but the salary cap situation might be an issue. Lyle Sendlein and his relatively large salary cap hit, considering the position he played, considering his performance. He's a team captain on offense, but tell me, how likely is it that you see Lyle Sendlein back with Cardinals in 2015?
This is a harder one, because until we see a move made in the offseason, like if they're going to try to sign I don't think they're going to go after center, to be completely honest. I think they want a guard tackle kind of swing guy that, you know, if something happens with Massey or a guy that they can kind of cook behind Massey for 2016. The center, I mean, if, you know, Wisniewski comes in at $3 or $4 million, maybe Rodney Hudson's way out of their range. I mean, they could definitely sign him, but from everything I've read in Kansas City is that he wants $7 million a year. They turned down like $4.24 last year. So you're talking maybe $4.30 for a center. And yeah, he's 25, and so he's definitely worth it. But like, that's just a lot of money. You know, that's like almost left tackle. That's almost what you paid Jared Belde or so.
Yeah, and tough. I think Sendlein, I think for me, Sendlein's going to be more of a 50-50 proposition. I think they really want him. I think it's 50-50 because I'm not sure that they trust the guys they have behind them. I don't know if they believe Ted Larson can be a full-time center, and I don't know about Anthony Steen. I think although I know they really like his upside, I don't know if they're ready to hand over the reins in year two.
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with Jonathan Cooper, and that's just, you know, the honest to goodness truth. I don't think they're like completely enamored with the idea of having Cooper and rookie center Cam Irving, you know, so to speak, as their, you know, 1-2 with, you know, double ACL tear Carson Palmer sitting back there. So I think they may keep Lyle around one more year, but you know, this is, and I never hope somebody's out of a job, but this is one of those where I really hope I'm wrong and that they do move on from Lyle, and whether it be a rookie or, you know, they sign a tier, you know, two type of center in free agency, or they just kick Larson inside and draft a guard. I'm good with moving on from Lyle. I was good 3 years ago moving on from Lyle. So anytime is a good time for me. He's been, I mean, he was one of the gems of the Ken Wisenhunt era, if we're being honest. I mean, an undrafted free agent that they got, what, 7-8 years in maybe 3 or 4 missed games outside of the season that he missed. I mean, he was a great find by Graves and Wisenhunt, and I'm sure time had a huge hand in that. So
yeah,
but it's probably time to move on. And you have seen that if Kime did have a hand in it, you have seen that Kime is a little I don't want to say touchy, but I mean he definitely gives his guys a little more rope.
You know, Ryan Williams,
yeah, that was his guy, and he wasn't gonna cut him, and Bruce Arians,
and he keeps talking up Jonathan Cooper too. I mean, there's a lot to like about Cooper, but yeah. You can tell the scout side that he believes in his guys a whole bunch, and it came like letting Adrian Wilson go. That brought him to tears. It brought him to tears. Let's talk another guy that we're probably, I mean, most Cardinals fans are probably wish he wasn't on the team, but he's still under contract for next season. That's John Carlson. They can let him go, save about $1.6 million in salary cap space, as there'd be only $50,000 in dead money. What percent chance do you see Carlson being on the Cardinals roster in 2015?
I think it depends on what they can get back. If they can get Hausler at like half that cost. So if they get Hausler for like $1 million a year, which people are going to be like, why would you want Hausler back? Well, would you rather have Rob Hausler for $1 million a year or, you know.
Or John Carlson at 1.6. I mean.
So. So I mean, I think if you can get Hausler for like 2 years at like the 1.6 number, I think you could see him go. But you can't go into a season with Darren Fells, as good as Darren Fells played, and as good as I think Troy Nicholas is going to be. You can't go into a season with them, you know, those as your 1-2, and then street free agent. As your number three tight end, especially in an offense that, Arians likes to use tight ends. So I think Hausler, Carlson, one of them has to be on the roster unless they address the tight end position again early in the draft. And, that's a whole nother story for another day.
If I'm going to give a percentage on it, and I'm going to put, and of course, now there's a couple of guys out there in free agency that intrigue me. One, James Casey, who already had a visit. I wonder what kind. To me, I haven't paid much attention to him, but the profile he fits, he's actually a perfect Bruce Arians tight end, the one that doesn't require the ball being thrown to him. He can play multiple positions. He can play tight end. He can play fullback. He can play H-back, which is kind of what Arians likes to do with his tight ends anyway. Another guy on the market that he will be very familiar with is Matt Spaeth. Whether he'll want to continue playing is another thing. I think he's a guy that you can bring in. He's the blocker. He's not going to need the ball thrown to him, and he can fulfill that role. Now, both being veterans, that's where Carlson kind of has the value, because he really brought – competition. He brought leadership to that tight end room. While he himself did not perform well, it was good for Rob Hausler, it was good for Troy Nicholas, and it was good for Darren Fells to have that type of guy in the room. I think it's probably 65% chance that Carlson's back next year, just because, I mean, his contract isn't too much, and he still is the best guy when it comes to the pass catching guy, when it comes to the type of routes they like him running, because they run a lot of receiver type routes, and he's the best guy for that. He moves the best. He does have the best, supposed to have the best hands. For whatever reason why he could not catch a pass from Carlson Palmer is beyond me. But I'd say 65% chance that he's back.
Yeah, I mean, that's right around there, that 50-60% chance. I think he's kind of a coin flip. If they prefer Hausler, over him, then, they'll make that work if they can get Hausler for the right number. Obviously, they want a tight end just by bringing in James Casey, but The question is price, because I don't think that's where they want to spend their, what do they have about right now, 16, 18, 19 million?
I think it's like four. I think technically it's like 14.9 million is what they got.
Okay.
Pending any other moves that they do. Let's look at Lorenzo Alexander, veteran guy, special teams guy. Leader, special teams captain. What percentage of, they're saying, some people say move on from him. He's versatile. He's good in the locker room. He's a good quote. He's a good rep to have on your team. Good in the locker room. What percentage do you say Lorenzo Alexander's back next season?
I think he's back. I think that's like 75%. I think with the loss of Dockett right now, they just need vets on the roster that can, you know, and he's kind of a jack of all trades, master of none type at that linebacker
yes.
position, where, you know, they can plug him in to play the middle. They can plug him into either outside if somebody gets hurt in a game. And, you know, he's not going to wow you, but he's not going to screw up.
He was pretty efficient, too, in his playground. He only had a handful of snaps, but he was pretty effective. And he's a guy, I'd say 95% that he's here. And it's based on the quote that Kruger said, is that there are certain guys on your roster that you lock in because of their special teams play. Now, he did have a knee issue. He hasn't been a Pro Bowler since he came here. He was a Pro Bowler last year in Washington, but he's one of those guys that Arian says you lock him on the roster because of their value on special teams. And the fact he's special teams captain, they need that. You get veterans in there. You've got Frosty Rucker. He's a different kind of veteran. He wasn't a vocal leader. You didn't see him, people gravitating. He did his job. People gravitate towards Lorenzo Alexander. He is a vocal leader. He's outspoken. He stands up in front of the microphones and says, and make statements on behalf of his teammates. And he's a guy you need in the locker room. So he's not a great defensive player. He does what he does. He's valuable on special teams. Although you say he's valuable on special teams and that they didn't have that great special teams units. But he's a guy you need. You need him in the locker room.
Yeah, I'm right here with you. I think that's kind of exactly.
And Hausler. What do you say about Hausler? What is the chance that you think? I have zero gauge on this. I have no idea what the feeling is in the facility for Hausler overall. I never got the feeling that they were upset or disappointed in him. Never at any time. Yet at the same time, they talked about all this talent that he never produced. So and his role changed. And he started getting some playing time. So I don't know the feel that I get. So what do you think? What's the percentage chance that he's back in the Cardinals uniform in 2015?
Probably like 25%. I think if the problem is, like, anybody that I've talked to around the league about Hausler doesn't have an opinion. And I think that's what the problem is. Like, I'm like, what do you think? Is Rod Hausler going to be kind of a commodity? And they're like, he's a guy that's got some skills, but like the fact that he runs a 4.5 or whatever doesn't really show up on tape.
It doesn't.
He's a decent blocker. I think he's underrated as a blocker. Personally, I think he's improved really, really well in his 4 years.
The reputation he has is an atrocious blocker, and he far improved. He was a much better blocker than Carlson was.
And I think the fact that he can't catch hurts him a lot. But, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that's going to end up getting picked up by, like, Philly and then
turn into a star.
40 catches for, like, 600 yards and 3 touchdowns or something crazy like that, because Chip Kelly knows how to coax, like, talent out of people that really don't have it. So
he's still good offensively to get things open. It's interesting because you get a guy, Jim Dre, a year ago. Jim Dre got, $7 million for 3 years? Jim Dre!
Yeah.
Jim Dre doesn't do anything well at all.
But tight end is managed such
$7 million out of Cleveland.
Yeah, and tight end is just such a bad position in the NFL. Like, there's so much need for tight ends, guys that can move, you know, and be versatile and kind of be a security blanket, but I mean, really what they just need is somebody that can at least move the needle on offense to have a, you know, be a threat against defenses. And Hausler, you know, as bad as Cardinals fans think he is, he still does that better than a guy like John Carlson who's on the roster. So, I mean, I think
Hausler made a big play almost. It was about one big play every single game for like the last half of the season. There was one huge play he managed to put up.
Yeah, and so I think they'd like to have him back, but I think the price has to be right. And like I said, I can't get a gauge on it from anybody I talk to. So I mean, honestly, I've asked three different guys that like either work for teams or are, you know things about teams, and their response is always, I mean, he's good. We'll see what the market dictates. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, does anybody actually like think anything about this guy, or is he just kind of an enigma and somebody's just going to pick him up on a 1-year flyer and see what you can get out of him?
Oh, wow. Well, let's move on. This is the fun part. The Cardinals are getting buzz with some big names. And it's a different feeling because this isn't the desperate Cardinals that signed Emmett Smith or a desperate Cardinals team that signed Edgerrin James. We now have two big time running backs who one who will be on the market and one that could be on the market or could be in play and trade. Adrian Peterson, DeMarco Murray, perhaps two of the biggest name running backs in all of football. And the Cardinals are connected to two of them, to both of them. DeMarco Murray, reportedly, I ran across the report. Ian Rappaport said that the Cardinals are one of four teams that are going to be potential suitors for him. Then Adrian Peterson. The Cardinals keep coming up with Adrian Peterson. For whatever reason, the situation is kind of weird of what happened, his legal issues with the abuse charge. That combined with Jonathan Dwyer with the same sort of issue, granted it was more spousal, and you've got Darryl Washington and his assault charge and his substance abuse problem. You wouldn't think that he'd be, but he keeps coming up. Kent Summers brought it up, and then it just got redfall. I heard Herm Edwards talk about it. Adrian Peterson's father brought up the name, and now reportedly, this is a report I saw just about an hour before the show. I mentioned it at the start of the show. I hope people heard me. I hope the audio was working at that time. Was that reportedly the Cardinals are on a list of five teams that Peterson is willing to renegotiate his deal if the Vikings would make a trade for him to one of those teams, and the Cardinals are one of those five teams. So we're starting to see some steam here. Maybe it's the Larry Fitzgerald connection. I don't know what it is, but the Cardinals and Adrian Peterson might actually be a thing. Do you think that actually be a thing?
I mean, it can be a thing as long as the cost isn't too much. That's my whole thing. This kind of goes back to what we talked about a couple of minutes ago about Kime and his fixation, his scouting fixation on guys.
That's
If Jay Cutler was available, like he'd be like, "Hey, let's go get Jay Cutler." Because, you know, these are all these like war stories of the past of like all Kime wanted was Adrian Peterson and everybody else in the room was like Levi Brown. And so now, you know, is this a fixation on that? Here's the thing, Adrian Peterson, and I'm trying to decide how I want to word this article. So like it comes out right. So maybe I'll just throw it out here on the radio. And if it comes out wrong, then I'll revamp the whole article. But Adrian Peterson is a great back. I don't know if he's going to be as great, you know, this year if he comes to the Cardinals or whatever. But what I worry about Adrian Peterson, and I mean this in the most like positive way possible, is that he's going to mask so many deficiencies that can be on the Cardinals offensive line that when he leaves, so if they fail to win a Super Bowl in that, say, 2 to 3 year range that he's here, and then he leaves, then we will be like, whoa, I thought this offensive line was good, and then they really weren't good because Adrian Peterson just covered up so much for them. They're kind of like Minnesota this year. I mean, their offensive line was just really like, eh. I mean, after the year before when Adrian Peterson went for, what, 2,000 yards or whatever, coming off a torn ACL. So I think the player itself is fine. I just worry about what he will do long-term if he comes to Arizona and he's good for 1 to 2 years and then they move on from him like you do any older running back. And then all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, this offensive line isn't good. And Adrian Peterson is just covering up stuff. And, you know, Carson Palmer's ability to get the ball out quick was covering up a lot of stuff. And now, you know, Carson Palmer's retired, Adrian Peterson's gone, and we have a really bad offensive line. It's kind of the opposite thing of DeMarco Murray. I'm not that high on DeMarco Murray. I think he got to run behind a great offensive line in Dallas. And so if the Cardinals are going to bring in an Adrian Peterson, I think that needs to reprioritize the offensive line even more, because now all of a sudden you have a 30-year-old running back and a 35 multiple surgery-year-old quarterback. So just continue to build that offensive line and let Adrian Peterson grind out games, especially when you have a lead. Kind of take on the Seahawks model. And then, you know, but I just – that's the one issue I have with the thought of Peterson, is that I worry that he'll mask too much and then things will kind of get forgotten.
Well, I'm gonna respond to that and say – that's thinking a little too far into the future, because let's look at that Seattle Seahawks team that won a Super Bowl a year ago, and just, you know, I don't know how they managed to somehow get completely outplayed and dominated for most of that game, and be one bad throw or one great play from a championship, and their offensive line, not very good. They're not that great, but they have a good scheme. They have Marshawn Lynch, and they have a very smart quarterback in Russell Wilson, because that offensive line isn't that great. The Cardinals' offensive line when they went to the Super Bowl, not very good. The offensive lines that Peyton Manning had in Indianapolis, not very good. I'm okay. In fact, if we can get Adrian Peterson at the right price, and it doesn't hamstring completely what they want to do the rest of the offseason, by all means, mask those problems on the offensive line. Because Carson Palmer is going to be gone in a couple of years, and because Adrian Peterson is going to be gone in a couple of years, so we're going to be looking at a completely different backfield, and we're going to look into a bit different quarterback. Who knows? I mean, as much as you want to build up that offensive line, you build up that offensive line, and you look at some of those elite teams, that they don't have great offensive lines. What they do is have good enough offensive lines. And it's when you don't have the talent, if we don't have the talent at running back or the talent at quarterback to make your line look better, you need your line to make those other plays better. And so I'm all for it. Let's roll a Ted Larson. Let's roll a Ted Larson and Anthony Steen and, you know, and Jonathan Cooper. And if we can grind out 1,500 yards for Adrian Peterson and, you know, 3,000 yards for Carson Palmer and maybe get us to the Super Bowl or be contending for Super Bowl in these next couple of years, hallelujah.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I just, you know me, I always find something. But no, it was just a thought.
You are very much, and you've tweeted it a couple of times, you are very much into, I don't give it. Is there over 25? Forget it. Draft another one. Yeah. Just draft another running back. Run him into the ground. Draft another running back. Run him into the ground. That's not a bad way to go. That's how a lot of the league is. I think I don't know about DeMarco. I mean, I do, in the fact that he's only been 4 years, he's played 16 games once. He does have somewhat of an issue with fumbling. And that the fact that the Cowboys were willing to move on from him, this is the Cowboys for whom, this is the guy, they drafted him, they brought him. When your team is willing to only pay you $4 million, guess what? That tells you something. That tells you something about them. So, I mean, Adrian, they can get Adrian Peterson. Hallelujah. Get him. get him, and then you're going to have, yes, you're going to have old players. So you're going to have an old Carson Palmer handing the ball off to a pretty old Adrian Peterson and throwing the ball to an old Larry Fitzgerald. That's a pretty good combo.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm okay with Adrian Peterson. I really don't have a desire to go after DeMarco Murray, or even this report that just came out. I don't know if you just saw it across Twitter, but apparently they're interested in C.J. Spiller as well. I have no desire to bring in running backs that are continually nicked up.
We've already got that.
Just bring back Ryan Williams, too, and we'll just make it a party in the training room.
Let's bring Richard out of retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Adrian Peterson's a generational back. I mean, it really went from like LaDainian Tomlinson to Adrian Peterson. There was, you know, it was just kind of a smooth transition in terms of amazing running backs. And so if you get Adrian Peterson and you only get two, you know, great years and then maybe one really good year, and then it's like, okay, well, it's time to go, then that's fine.
And that'll be better than the Cardinals have had. I mean,
yeah, exactly. DeMarco Murray, C.J. Spiller, any of those other running backs literally don't do anything for me. I think you can get a guy like, you know, not to go too much on the draft, but I think you can get a guy like Tevin Coleman or David Cobb, you know.
Stop it. We'll talk draft. It's just not tonight. We're going to talk draft another night. I know you want to talk draft all the time, all every day.
But yeah, I mean,
we're talking free agents.
Over a guy like C.J. Spiller or DeMarco Murray. That's all I'll say about the draft, though, I promise.
No, I totally understand. Totally. Toss it out there. I wrote about it. I threw the question out there. I'm not sold. I'm not sure they should do it. But Justin Houston, you know, it's a non-exclusive tag. It'll cost you a couple of first-rounders and a lot of money. He's a game-changer, though. He is a game-changer. Question. Let me put this out there. Do you go after Houston for the cost? Elite at pretty much everything that you do at that position. Or do you spend a lot of money and still have your draft picks and hopefully land a guy like Jerry Hughes? Which do you pick?
I think for me, you go after Justin Houston first. And here's why. So if you're going to, let's just say the Cardinals at 24 have their choice of all the pass rushers in the draft. Every one of them, for whatever reason, is available at 24. Vic Beasley, Dante Fowler, Bud Dupree, you know, every single one of them. Are any of them as good right now as Justin Houston?
Or will they ever be? And probably not. They won't ever be as good as Justin Houston, unlikely.
And that's the other point. So they're not as good right now, and they're likely not going to reach his level of you know, greatness, and he's great. So that pick at 24 now is gone, and that's the Chiefs pick. So, you know, in this hypothetical scenario, so that pick is the Chiefs pick, but in reality, you just drafted your pass rusher. So now all of a sudden, all you really gave up, and this is me also rationalizing the deal, you're giving up is a future one. And now here's the key that a lot of people don't know about, and I'm going to bet you a dollar if this happens that the Chiefs will be adamant that they're not going to take that first-round pick for 2 years, that second first-round pick. I think they'll want this year's, but they'll be adamant that until the Carson Palmer deal is up, which will be, you know, 2 years, basically, that they don't want that first-round pick because they don't want to take the chance that Palmer stays healthy, the Cardinals find a way to get Adrian Peterson
It's a 25-32 pick in the first round.
Yeah, and so they'll want to wait 2 years, see if Palmer retires, and then they have that one bad year where, you know, oh, something bad happens, you know, and they have Derek Anderson or, you know, Logan Thomas' first year starting at quarterback, and they go 5-11, and now all of a sudden they're picking, and the Chiefs are like, thanks for that other pick. So that's the risk you run. that's the one risk that nobody really talks about in this scenario, because everybody just assumes, oh, we'll take your next two first-round picks. But the Chiefs can negotiate that other – they can negotiate both first-round picks. But, I mean, it would be really idiotic not to take 24 this year. You know, but there is that chance that they'd be like, hey, we don't want your 2016 first-round pick. We want that 2017 first-round pick. And then the Cardinals are going to have to go, okay, well –
and then then they laugh. They win the Super Bowl. Carson Palmer retires, and they start Logan Thomas next year.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they. that's what they have to. You know, that's and in my opinion, like you just said, Justin Houston is a game changer. So you make the if you can make the deal for 6 years or 7 years, he's 26. You know, you give him a 6 year, $100 million deal. Holy cow, that's a lot of money. Yeah, I get that. But you're talking
even at the end of that deal, he's 33, 32.
Yeah, 32 years old. And he's, and you're not talking about a guy like Jerry Hughes, who I really like, who I think is that he's in that second tier. And that's not a bad second tier. But I think when you talk about Justin Houston, you're talking about an elite talent. Just outside of that J.J. Watt neighborhood, which is, you know, its own street, really. And then, but then you have other guys like Houston and Richard Sherman and you know, Lavonte David and those really top-tier guys, and Luke Kuechly and all those guys, that those are game-changers. And so that's who, you know, Justin Houston is one of those game-changers, and he's young. That's better than any, you know, first round pick outside of a potential franchise quarterback, in my opinion.
And me, I'm not risky enough to take, to give up those picks and pay all that money, especially since I've seen the Cardinals bitten in free agency before on big deals. And I've seen it happen to other teams. Yeah. See the guy, he is a game changer, but would it be a better value to get a guy that can get you between 10 and 15 instead of 15 to 20 sacks? And then having that first round pick to draft another guy that you're going to be able to pay much less. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to roll the dice. I don't think in my mind, I'd like to say, yeah, go all in. We're getting Justin Houston. And that'd be kind of a Bruce Arians thing to do. Especially since he's not going to get another coaching job somewhere else. He's going to retire after this. He's just to hell with it. We're going to go get him. We're going to go balls out, and we're going to do it. I can't think that.
Yeah. And Arians, like you just said, I mean, like he may think that, okay, what do you get a 3-year contract extension?
Well, he's under control for 4 years plus a fifth year option.
Okay, so like through 2020 or whatever, 19 or 20. Yeah, 19, so yeah. I mean, Arians might literally just think, okay, I have 2 years because I don't have any idea what we're going to do post Carson Palmer. I'm not going to tell anybody that, but I don't have any idea.
It's like, Carson Palmer's retiring? I'm retiring.
Yeah, so that, I think that might be, I mean, that's kind of, like you said, that kind of fits into his, like, gunslinger gambler mentality of, you know what, screw it, let's go get Adrian Peterson and let's go get Justin Houston and let's make a, you know, a run,
historic run ideally, and then if we're not, well, we're gonna die guns a blazing.
Yep. And that might be his thought. He's like, oh, well, I was out of here anyways in 3 years, so who cares? but yeah, I think Hughes, the one thing that concerns me about Hughes is where was most of his success? It was in that 43, you know, so, you know, he wasn't quite as useful in the 3-4 and Indy and things of that nature, but as a slight concern, I think. You'd like to believe that if you bring in a guy like Hughes, you know, you don't square peg, round hole it. And I think Betcher is, I shouldn't say I think, I hope Betcher is creative enough to use him in a way that will you know, utilize his talents. But again, that's the whole Justin Houston thing. Again, he's a three, he's a natural 3-4 outside linebacker. That's all he's ever done. So that's what you're getting. You know, Jason Worldless, Brandon Graham, who are the other guys even on the market? I mean, it's a good market. They're just all guys that you're going to have to pay a lot of money to. I mean, you're talking probably $10 million a year for all of them.
So that's the next question. Assuming, or even, would you, if let's say Houston's out of the question, we're not going to do that. Would you go Jason Hughes? Would you go, well, Jerry Hughes? Would you go, you know, Jason Worlds? Would you go, is Hughes now the top of the list, or would you perhaps pay a little less, if any, for a guy like Worlds who played in a Pittsburgh system? Where you know that he's going to have some familiarity and philosophy that Arians in part agrees with. And who are some guys that obviously Cardinals are going to be looking pass rush inside? Or I liked your mocking tweet this morning where a certain local sports guy tweeted some of the needs that they're going to address in the free agency, and which a whole bunch, and you're like, you followed it up with, yeah, so pretty much the Cardinals, like every other team, are going to address their needs in free agency and the draft. We know the priorities. They want to get faster at inside linebacker. They want to add pass. They want to add speed on defense overall. They want to get more physical on the offensive line. They want a bigger running back, somebody to complement Andre Ellington, who they still believe in, but they believe they can focus him more, but less on the you know, the bell cow type. Back. Who are some players that you are hearing or you think would be good match? We actually had a pretty good, we both kind of tossed out Ted Ginn out there as a name that the Cardinals could pick up, and it was good in thought. It just didn't turn out all right, as he's now been released. But who are some names that would match up with what the Cardinals need and might be in play budget-wise?
I have to go pull up all our text messages now. I think the first guy, I think you're going to see them address pass rusher. I think that's where they want to go. You've talked about the inside linebackers. Name I heard was Roach. I can't remember his first name now. Was it Nick?
Nick Roach, yes. Was with the Bears, recently with the Raiders. I like the match, like in terms of physically. I like the fact that he was coached by Larry Sanders. Big red flag about his concussion.
Yeah, he's
big red flag.
He's an injury red flag all the way. But I mean, I think that's a guy they're gonna talk to. I've heard that if the 49ers don't tender, and I honestly don't know how the tenders work, so you can explain it to me. Michael Wilhoit, if they don't tender him too high. I can't remember how it works, to be honest with you. That they'll be interested.
I'll give that. He's an exclusive rights free agent, which means he's got less than 3 years credited, and it's pretty much this: the 49ers, all they have to do is offer him a tender, which is simply league minimum, which will, I think, this year for him will be worth about $570,000. And if they decide they want him on the roster, he has to be on the roster, otherwise he doesn't get to play in the league. The only way any team will have any chance at him is if they simply don't tender him. And as far as I know, he has not been tendered. But I don't know if they've made their tender offers to any of their exclusive rights players.
Yeah, and I've just heard that that's a name that they like, that, you know, the 3-4 experience, you know, a guy that can move a little bit. And, you know, I'm sure the 49ers are going to tender him. That was just a name that was brought up to me by somebody that I talked to. And so that was I thought that was an interesting one. At cornerback, I have to go back and look at the name. There's a kid out of Green Bay that's younger, kind of a tier two corner that's played behind Sam Shield and Tremont Williams quite a bit his whole career. I think his last name's House. Bigger, lankier corner. And then on the offensive line, I mean, we kind of hit them earlier. I think they would like a guard or a center. And really,
are they, do you think they were going to be in play for a guy like an Orlando Franklin or Mike Iupati? I mean, that's more names. I don't know if I necessarily want them.
No, I don't see those big names. I think they're going to be looking at a guy that can kind of swing between positions. Like I said, Franklin could be a guy because he's played a little right tackle, so maybe they bring him in to play right guard this year, and then if, you know, Bobby Massey blows up or falls flat or, you know, they don't bring him back in 2016, then they can, you know, they have a right tackle that they can lean on in Orlando Franklin, and then if he, you know, if they want to draft or, you know, whatever they decide to do, you know, he's the flexibility position. I've heard that they want flexibility. That's why they like Larson so much. That's why they like Steen so much. That's why they like
Bradley Saul.
Yeah.
He's Saul, back. He's back.
Yeah. And even Cooper. I mean, Cooper took snaps at center in workouts, you know, in the draft process. And Earl Walker, they've worked him at center too. So I think they want a lot of flexibility from backups, and then they want, you know, and then Larson, that guard center type thing. And then if they bring in somebody, it'll either be another guard center or guard tackle. Wisniewski and Franklin are really the only two guys I can think of off the top of my head. I don't know about like a Todd Hermans, if he's going to play still or is he retiring. I mean, I don't know. And quite frankly, he's not really that great, but he kind of fits that mold of veteran guy that can do different things on the line if they need him to type of player, which is, I think, what they're looking for. I don't think they're going to break the bank and go grab a Mike Iupati to play right guard where he's been a left guard his whole career. People might go, oh, who cares? Well, there are different steps. They're different philosophies, and he's going to have to, you know, do something different. He you know, Mike Iupati would make sense to go to, like, Buffalo. I don't think he makes sense here in Arizona, where they're hopefully finally going to get Jonathan Cooper to play left guard.
And they could, I mean, they could go with the slightly older version, a guy that Arians is very familiar with, and Willie Colon. He's down the list a little bit, but he won't cost as much money. But he is a guy that's well known on the guards. Running back, a guy that has come up a couple of times, and I know he's had his injury issues, but I think the price tag would come. Like, if they can't land a guy like Adrian Peterson, Darren McFadden is an interesting name to me because he has the size. And I think he would play that Rashard Mendenhall role really well. The Jonathan, what they wanted out of Jonathan Dwyer role really well, and complement Andre Ellington without necessarily being the generational back that Adrian Peterson is. I think he's a guy to keep an eye out. I know that name has come up among some local media guys. Darren McFadden is a guy you might see. Frank Gore is an interesting one, though I can't imagine him ever leaving San Francisco, though it might happen. I mean, he would, for me, he'd be a perfect back here because he's just a machine.
Yeah, Gore is interesting. I really like the idea of Gore. Another one that's interesting is Stephen Ridley, New England. I know he's had some like injuries and fumbles and things of that nature, but he's a tough runner and he catches well in the backfield. And you know, that's kind of an Arians thing that he's developed with Ellington. And you want to talk about a back that can complement Ellington and kind of work in with Ellington, but also do some different things. I think Ridley would be an interesting one. Apparently, they're just going to go after all the big name free agents based on all these reports that they're interested in all the big name guys. But you know, like we talked about, top backs. I have no desire to see DeMarco Murray or C.J. Spiller. If they go after a tier two guy like a Frank Gore or a Stephen Ridley, I think that's absolutely the right type of guy. Darren McFadden's interesting. If he was healthier, I'd be all for that, but he's never healthy. And so that's just, I mean, I think you're going to get into that kind of Rashard Mendenhall thing where you're going to see a guy that comes in and, you know, has 20 carries for, you know,
60 yards, 52 yards, 20 carries for 50 yards.
And then, you know, have to miss two games and then comes back and does 20 carries for 80 yards. And you're like, okay, he's getting healthy. And then you have to miss three games and you're like, oh, all right, This is ridiculous. So, I mean, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe McFadden will finally be healthy and be productive. But I have a lot of Raiders fans I talk to, and they've been saying that for like 4 years. So I would.
At tight end, the couple of names of James Casey. Well, obviously, he was a guy that hit the market early. Matt Spaeth is a guy I think that the Cardinals would be very interested in if Spaeth is willing to play, just because. I just think he will fit that role perfectly as to what they want to do. Veteran guy. They really don't throw the ball. As much as they talked about throwing the ball, they didn't really try throwing the ball a whole lot to the tight ends. And so they gives you that blocking guy. And imagine with the trio of Spaeth and Fells and Nicholas, that's a really good blocking group of tight ends. And I really like that.
And the guy I'm really bummed that I was hoping would get kind of through the cracks is Charles Clay out of Miami. He's transition tag, so you have to, like, beat that $7 million.
And you don't want to pay that much to tight end. Nope.
Yeah. Virgil Green's another interesting name. I like Niles Paul, but he's more of a move tight end, so he's kind of in that Hausler mold, but he's actually, like, can catch and looks athletic. While doing so, as opposed to just like looks athletic when he's not doing football things. So, you know, tight end's an interesting group. I don't know if they're going to go after a tight end in free agency. I don't know. I like this group of tight ends. I think there's a lot of talent on the free agent market. I just don't see them. Like, they're not going to go after Julius Thomas. That just doesn't even make sense for what Aaron likes to do. But who knows? I mean, they're going after all the big-name running backs and outside linebackers, so maybe they'll go after the big-name tight ends.
Inside linebackers to look at, I mean, the name Brandon Spikes is there. I don't like, you know, he's a better version of Kevin Minter. When they want to add speed, I don't think that's the guy they're kind of looking for. Nick Roach, it's a name to pay attention to. Looking some of the other names on here, I mean, you could go back to Desmond Bishop, but they don't, the inside linebacker, Ray Meleuga, AJ Hawk, who is, you know, sloppy seconds of the Packers, whose defense wasn't that good. So, yeah, I mean, the guys in the middle, are there, I mean, are they going all in with Darrell Washington? Is that the case? They going in all with D-Wash and after that, do you see them picking anybody up in free agency at inside linebacker?
If Rolando McClain wasn't such a knucklehead, I think that'd be interesting. But
Yes, and they got. I mean, we've already got a linebacker. We already got Washington's going to be suspended. We don't need to take on two linebackers that are going to be missed the first quarter of the season.
Nate Irving is interesting. I can't remember where he played last year, but he's a pretty good backer. I mean, this inside linebacker class is really uninspiring, in my opinion. I like David Harris, but I think he's going to go to Buffalo with Rex. So,
and he's going to be pricey.
Yeah, probably. Nate Irving would be one I would like kind of follow along with quietly and see kind of what the market dictates for him. But outside of that, I'm trying to go through the list right now.
It's uninspiring.
None of these guys really move the meter. So no.
Honestly, outside of the couple of big names, looking at the edge guys, the edge defenders. There's guys who are like, Greg Hardy, kind of an issue there too. Can he play 3-4 outside? Arakpo, old, hurt. Worlds hasn't been he's a guy who can play that role. You don't want to pay him too much. Then you've got guys that came out of the draft a couple, 3 years ago that as a side, we looked at Akeem Ayers, Brooks Reed, but actually the name that actually intrigues me almost a little bit more as a possibility is Trent Cole. He's older, but I think if I recall on one of the pregame conversations that I had with an Eagles guy was that Cole would have been the guy I would have picked to be on the Cardinals because of his production and what the role he would be able to fill. He'd be kind of like that John Abraham pickup and he's not a long-term fix by any means, but if they're looking for production, if they're looking for a pass rusher, Tarik Cole might not be a bad pickup.
No, I mean, he might not be, especially if they're just looking for a John Abraham type of impact where a guy can rush the passer. I'm going through the names right now. Brooks Reed, maybe. I mean, he's interesting. Akeem Ayers played well in New England after he got there. So, I mean, that's another guy. I really want nothing to do with, like, Brian Arakpo, just because I don't want to deal with injury issues where, you know, he comes out and has 8 sacks the first 3 games. And then
and then he's not on the field for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's the type of thing. I think the names are interesting. I just don't think they're necessarily fit with what the Cardinals want to do. So, you know, this is an interesting class because, you know, I poked fun at them, and it was honestly a jest, but I'm sure. I mean, I'm already blocked anyway, so it's not like anybody saw anything. But, you know, it's that silly idea that, like, the Cardinals are going to address all their needs in free agency in the draft. And the reality is they're going to sign probably a guy at all their needs or draft, you know, but they're not going to fix all those needs, because if they were, then they wouldn't be needs. And then they've honestly, I mean, you look at this team and you look at this roster since Arians and Keim took over, interior offensive line and inside linebacker and pass rusher have really been the same needs over, you know, over the whole 3 years. Every offseason, it's been the same thing. They got Carlos Dansby and Darrell Washington. All of a sudden, they're really good. And then Dansby signed
the
Browns.
And then they weren't, because they weren't on the field.
Yeah, and then Washington suspended forever. And now they're, you know, so then this year it was Larry Foote and Kevin Minter. And then, well, Minter's not really good, so we're going to play our number one draft pick safety at inside linebacker, and he's going to play good and then wear down because he's getting the crap kicked out of him every week, and he weighs 210 pounds. And, you know, you look at it and you're still in that same spot. It's like, oh, they need an interior offensive lineman, they need an inside linebacker, and they need a pass rusher. And it's like, well, wasn't this where we were when they started 3 years ago? It's just,
yeah,
the names,
but everyone needs a pass rusher.
Well, that's true.
Almost. Except the freaking Chiefs.
Yeah, exactly.
They have two.
But you look at it, and I think they're going to continue to be searching for those players that fill those roles. And, you know, they did with, you know, you look at it, they've had Fanica and Larson and Steen and Cooper and Watford. I mean, they've brought in 5 guys for two positions. And nothing's clicked yet. So it's not like they haven't tried the last 2 years. It's just that they haven't hit it. And, you know, you look at outside linebacker. I mean, they've had, I think, 8 outside linebackers the last 2 years, and it just hasn't worked. They've had 6 inside linebackers that have been on game day rosters. That doesn't even include all the other guys, and they just haven't worked. So it's just that, I mean, it's not from lack of trying. So they're going to address all those needs again. It's just, will they actually be addressed is another conversation completely. And I think that's where we're going to be at again. You know, they like 2 guys at inside linebacker. Well, I mean, I like 2 guys at inside linebacker too, because they run a 3-4, so they need to like 2 guys at inside linebacker. they have to find the 2 guys that are going to be the answer to the question of who's going to be Dansby in Washington. Hopefully Washington's going to be Washington, but they need somebody else. They need a pass rusher, and you know, these are all positions that are available for upgrade in free agency. But the Cardinals are going to have to be really creative because they don't have a ton of money.
Absolutely. Well, that more money might be coming. We'll have to wait and see over the next few days. This has been a long, with a few technical difficulties there at the beginning of the show. This has been one of our long shows. It's been a little while since we've been on this show. This is Revenge of the Verge Radio. We talked free agency. We talked Arizona Cardinals offseason news. The next time we come on, we'll probably give it a couple of weeks because our first show
If we were to do one next week, it would just be with the first night of free agency, and we would probably just be looking at Twitter talking about, oh, look who signed a contract there. So let's give it a couple of weeks. Let's let the first week of signings come in, and then we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for coming on, Seth, tonight, and thanks for filling in for that few minutes that I didn't know what was going on technically. Yeah, it's always after the free agent show, guess what? We can talk draft.
We're going to talk draft. All right.
We're going to talk draft.
Something I know about.
And I'll let you lead those because I don't know nearly as much. I lean on you for my draft knowledge. This has been Riven to the Verge Radio. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. If you still happen to be listening after 90 minutes later, you can find us online, RevengeOfTheBirds.com, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, everything. But thanks for listening. Have a great night.
Have a good one.
Oh my gosh, are we not going to get the outro?
Everyone has a story to tell. Take Jen. She can see all the films she wants, whenever she wants, at Cineworld. From Finding Dory and the BFG to Suicide Squad. She gets 10% off all her cinema snacks, Baskin-Robbins, sweets and treats, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of her favourite restaurants, like Frankie and Benny's. That's Jen's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited from just $17.40 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at your local Cineworld or visit cineworld.com.